This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Lori Erica Ruff? First, I'll look at the background of this case, including the timeline of the incident, then offer my analysis. In 2003, a woman who went by the name Lori Erica Kennedy lived in Carrollton, Texas, which is just north of Dallas. While attending a Bible study at the Northwest Bible Church in Dallas, she met a man named John Blakely Ruff. The couple became romantically involved. John, who went by the name Blake, was from a wealthy family, had a bachelor's degree, and worked for Verizon. Blake was described as socially awkward and honest. Lori told Blake that she was from Scottsdale, Arizona. Both her parents were dead, and she had no siblings. When her father was alive, he worked as a stockbroker. Her childhood was unhappy, and she didn't like to talk about it. The romantic relationship between Lori and Blake progressed. Blake's family wasn't too happy about this because Lori was standoffish, rude, and would not share anything about her past. She wouldn't even reveal where she graduated from high school. On January 5, 2004, Lori and Blake married in a very small wedding. Other than them, the only other person there was the church pastor who officiated. Lori changed her last name from Kennedy to Ruff. The newlywed couple moved to Leonard, Texas, which is about an hour northeast of Dallas. When asked about putting a wedding announcement in a local newspaper, Lori refused. The couple's neighbors in Leonard found Blake to be friendly, but Lori mostly kept to herself. On the few occasions when she went outside, she avoided eye contact. Lori called herself a marketing consultant and performed various work on the computer. At one point, she was some type of mystery shopper. As it turns out, Lori was a mystery shopper in more than one sense of the term. She might have been the most mysterious shopper of all. Lori and Blake tried to have children, but Lori had 4 miscarriages. After receiving fertility treatments, Lori had a daughter named Jessica Emily Ruff on September 5, 2008. People noticed that Lori did not seem comfortable being a mother, as if she had no experience around children. She never left Jessica alone and was very protective. Blake's family members continued to find Lori difficult to deal with. There was a lot of tension. During family gatherings, Lori would walk away and take a nap. She never socialized. Furthermore, she was highly critical of Blake's family and would complain about them constantly. Eventually, Lori said she did not want Jessica spending any time with Blake's parents. This presented a serious threat to the marriage. Lori and Blake sought counseling, but ultimately, they could not work things out. In June 2010, Blake moved in with his parents in Longview, Texas, and filed for divorce. Longview is about 2 hours and 15 minutes from Leonard. After Blake's departure, neighbors noticed that Lori had various mental health symptoms. She seemed to be frantic, incoherent, and nervous. Normally, she wouldn't talk to neighbors, but now she wouldn't stop talking. She would ramble on about what was wrong with her. She desperately wanted to reunite with Blake. And on occasion, Lori repeated the same statements many times over the course of an hour. It was like she became fixated on one particular idea and could not let it go. Lori blamed Blake's parents for the separation. In the fall of 2010, she sent threatening emails to the Ruff family. On one occasion, she even entered their house in Longview, making demands. On December 24, 2010, just before 7 a.m., Blake's father walked outside his house to retrieve the newspaper. He noticed a black Chevrolet Tahoe idling in the driveway. Fearful about what was happening and wanting to avoid a confrontation, he went back inside his house and called the police. When the police arrived, they found Lori dead in the driver's seat of the vehicle with a gunshot wound to her right temple. A pistol was found in her right hand. It was clear that the only person involved in Lori's death was Lori. 2 notes were found in the vehicle. One was addressed to "My Wonderful Husband," The other was to Lori's daughter, Jessica, and was not supposed to be opened until her daughter turned 18. At the time Lori died, Jessica was with Blake in his parents' house. Not long after Lori's death, the Ruff family went to her house in Leonard, Texas. They were interested in finding information about who Lori really was. The house was a mess. There was laundry on the floor. Dishes were stacked up. Trash bags full of shredded documents were everywhere. The bed that Lori's daughter Jessica slept in was soiled. And there were papers all over the place containing Lori's handwriting. She had written what appeared to be random nonsense. On January 1, 2011, the Ruff family found a strong box in the closet bearing the label Crafts. They pried it open with a screwdriver and discovered a court document indicating that Lori had once been named Becky Sue Turner. She changed her name to Lori Erica Kennedy in 1988. On September 1, 2011, the Social Security Administration started an investigation due to concerns that Lori had perpetrated identity theft. Here's what the investigation revealed. Lori had no criminal record, and there was no record of her existing at all before 1988. On May 20 of that year, she obtained a copy of the birth certificate of a girl named Becky Sue Turner. Becky had been born on July 18, 1969, in Bakersfield, California. On December 30, 1971, when Becky was 2 years old, she died in a house fire in Fife, Washington. The fire also killed two of her sisters. Becky's brief and tragic journey through life had an unusual characteristic. She was born in one state, but died in another. This meant that someone could steal her identity much more easily, especially back in the late 1980s, when records dealing with identity were not often transmitted between states. On June 16, 1988, about a month after obtaining the birth certificate, Lori used it to obtain an Idaho identification card using her own photograph, but Becky Sue Turner's name. After spending time in Idaho, Lori traveled to California, Las Vegas, and eventually to Texas. On July 5, 1988, she legally changed her name from Becky Sue Turner to Lori Erica Kennedy. 7 days later, she applied for a Social Security number. The next day, she obtained a Texas identification card. Less than a year later, she obtained her Texas driver's license. On March 19, 1990, Lori applied for a U.S. passport. She went on to earn her GED and enrolled in a community college. On February 21, 1997, Lori filed for Chapter 13 bankruptcy. On December 13 of that same year, she graduated from the University of Texas at Arlington with a degree in business administration. By 2001, she was living in Bedford, Texas. By 2003, she was living in Carrollton. This is when she met Blake Ruff. Investigators had uncovered an interesting story, but they still did not know who Lori was. There was no apparent connection between Lori and Becky Sue Turner. Why did Lori target Becky Sue for identity theft? There was no evidence that Lori ever profited from stealing her identity. She didn't do it to make money. Was Lori on the run from criminals? Was she involved in espionage? Could her behavior be explained by mental health factors? There were no answers in this case. Many people were frustrated and concerned that the mystery would never be solved.
Hey, hast du heute Nacht gut geschlafen? Und deine Haut auch? Stell dir vor, du erlebst den HK-Effekt. Deine Wäsche riecht einfach frisch, ganz ohne chemische Duftwolke. Und deine Haut atmet auf. Beim Putzen musst du nicht husten, sondern kannst einfach durchatmen. Das ist der Moment, in dem du spürst, sauber geht auch anders. Mit HK. Unbedenklich, hautfreundlich und dennoch wirksam. Probiere den HK-Effekt für Sauberkeit, die sich gut anfühlt. Jetzt entdecken auf hk.com.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer günstig und natürlich mit dem Aldi-Tiefpreisversprechen. Zum Beispiel knackiges Gemüse, saftiges Obst, frische Backwaren. Kurz gesagt, mehr Frische für alle. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote zum Tiefpreis in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
In 2013, the Seattle Times released an article about the case, which greatly increased interest in finding Lori's real identity. In December of 2015, a forensic genealogist determined that Lori was somehow connected to the Cassidy family in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In March of 2016, one of the Cassidys identified Lori as a woman named Kimberly McLean. It took years, but there was finally an answer in this case. Kimberly Maria McLean was born on October 16, 1968, and was raised in the Philadelphia suburb of Wynwood. Her father, James, was a carpenter. Her mother, Deanne, was a homemaker. Kimberly had a sister named Michelle. When Kimberly was a teenager, her parents divorced. Her mother married a man named Robert Becker and moved to another suburb of Philadelphia called Wyncote. Kimberly attended Bishop McDevitt High School. In 1986, when Kimberly was 18 years old, she moved about 10 miles away to King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. She told her mother she was leaving for good and warned her not to come after her. Her family never reported her missing, and Kimberly was never heard from again. The mystery of Lori Erica Ruff's identity had been solved. She was Kimberly McLean, but this did not reveal her motive. Kimberly's behavior still remains a mystery. Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number one. When Kimberly was young, she was described as a socially awkward loner who did not fit in very well at school. She was cold, distant, and forgettable. When she left home at the age of 18, none of her high school classmates realized she was missing. None of her family members contacted the police. Kimberly was an adult when she left and was free to make her own decisions. Perhaps this is why no one reported her missing. Item number two. On September 15, 1987, about a year after Kimberly moved to King of Prussia and lost contact with her family, her father died at the age of 52. His estate attempted to locate Kimberly because she had inherited $84,000. They discovered that she was in Utah, but she never responded and therefore never collected her inheritance. $84,000 in 1987 is equivalent to about $232,000 in 2024. This is a lot of money to forfeit. There was no real downside to collecting the money, even if Kimberly left home because she was fearful of family members. She didn't need to meet them in person to get her inheritance. It made more sense to get the money either way, because $84,000 would have gone a long way in helping Kimberly remain hidden if that's what she wanted to do. Item number three, when Kimberly McLean assumed the identity of Becky Sue Turner, she committed a serious crime. She was already away from her family. No one was looking for her. There was no need to engage in criminal behavior to stay hidden. This behavior introduced risk and complications which were unnecessary. After stealing the identity, Kimberly quickly changed her name to Lori Erica Kennedy, as if she wanted an extra layer of protection. She was trying to become more distant from family members or from someone. There is no indication that Kimberly ever used her fake identity for any type of material gain. Prior to marrying Blake, Kimberly mostly worked in secretarial-type jobs, even after earning a bachelor's degree. A former love interest indicated that Kimberly worked as a clothing challenge dancer at one time, which seems like a strange choice of occupation for someone so interested in concealment. Kimberly always had money problems and even filed for bankruptcy once, as I mentioned. Item number four, when Kimberly became romantically involved with Blake, she struggled to maintain peace with his family. This was an inferior tactic because it jeopardized her cover. She made them suspicious about her identity when there was no reason to. Kimberly could have easily avoided being evasive and impolite. For example, she could have obscured her past with some type of simple explanation, like she was estranged from her family. This would have explained why she didn't want a wedding announcement in the local newspaper. She didn't want her family members to find her. Instead, Kimberly said that her family was dead. If this was true, why was she hiding? It's almost like she never contemplated how others would perceive her story, or lack of a story. Kimberly had been diligent as far as stealing another person's identity, but then became haphazard when protecting that new identity. Item number five, as I mentioned, Kimberly left two letters behind. In her letter to Blake, Kimberly repeatedly explained how she loved him and was grateful to have been his wife. She talked about how Blake gave her a family, a beautiful little girl, cousins, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and in-laws. She wished that she had communicated her love to her husband more effectively. The reason she made her exit when she did was because she did not want to die being divorced. Kimberly explained how she had been diagnosed with depression and anxiety and felt as though Blake never bothered to learn about her conditions. He did not conduct any research, according to Kimberly. She blamed all her bad behavior on the mental health symptoms and said she never intended to hurt Blake. She felt misunderstood by him and his family and accused them of assuming many wrong things about her. Moving to my final item, number 6. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Kimberly McLean was antagonistic, distant, standoffish, evasive, hostile, paranoid, depressed, anxious, vindictive, erratic, and may have had some reality testing problems. When she was younger, she was a loner who did not have strong connections to her family or to anyone else. Many people think that she must have been mistreated, and that's why she left Pennsylvania, but there isn't really much evidence to support that theory. The only person who committed a crime that we know of in this case was Kimberly. Mental health symptoms offer the most reasonable explanation for her mysterious behavior. She became paranoid and thought that people were out to get her. Therefore, she committed identity theft. During her marriage to Blake, Kimberly was difficult to live with and repeatedly aggravated Blake's family. The concerns the Ruff family had with her extended beyond Kimberly's evasiveness. She was trying to cut them off from Jessica. The reason Kimberly selected Christmas Eve and the driveway of the Ruff family house to make her exit from this world was to get revenge on Blake's parents. She planned this act carefully and even had notes ready. Kimberly deliberately did not dispose of the strongbox containing documents that facilitated the investigation into her identity. A woman who spent her entire life trying to hide her identity used her last moments to make sure everyone in the world would know her name.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.